Our next matter is State of Minnesota.
They don't have Beltran, or we're changing.
Do we have Beltrami County available yet?
Oh, can you hear me?
Yeah, I heard somebody. Are you in Beltrami County?
Judge, you have, I suppose, good morning still. This is Dave Frank. I'm the Chief Assistant Beltrami County Attorney, and I'll be representing the respondent. Does the court have me on video yet?
We do have you on video, that's correct. And I believe I saw counsel for appellant as well. Is that correct?
That's right.
Very good. Then we have you both. 818-1872 is our file number. And you each will have 15 minutes, of course, and we ask that you pay attention to the time guideline. And we do, we've seen both of you at least briefly now. And if it changes, we will try to let you know. And so, counsel for appellant, you may proceed.
Thank you. Good morning. May I please the court? My name is Adam Lozo, and I represent the appellant, Rainey Carpenter. The sheriff's deputy stopped Carpenter's truck and immediately climbed up onto the truck steps so that he'd be able to see inside the cab. He remained on the truck for approximately 15 minutes while he questioned Carpenter and observed the cab's interior. When the deputy physically occupied the truck's steps for the purpose of investigating Carpenter, he performed a warrantless search, and that search led directly to the discovery of all of the evidence against Carpenter. Carpenter's attorney's failure to recognize and raise this constitutional issue constituted deficient performance, and Carpenter's convictions must be reversed. Right now, one thing that's important to keep in mind is that the rule regarding this situation, the constitutional rule regarding physical trespasses onto vehicles, is clear. The rule requires the rule provides that a search is performed when police physically intrude upon a vehicle in order to perform an investigation. The clarity of this rule is important, and that's why not only why this court should conclude that Mr. Carpenter's rights were violated in this case, but also why the attorney's performance was deficient in failing to recognize and raise this issue.
I want to make sure. I think this is true. I think that the state did not address the inevitable discovery issue, so that's off the table for them. And with regard to you, you're not contesting the initial suppression issues that were raised below, correct?
That's correct. Yes, both of those statements are correct. The state at no point raised inevitable discovery, and it certainly wouldn't apply in this case anyway. But yes, the two issues that were litigated below, I'm not raising either. What I'm focusing on, what I raised at the post-conviction court and before this court, is the issue of whether Mr. Carpenter's rights are violated by the physical intrusion onto his vehicle for the purpose of investigation.
Could you find any cases that were available to your client's counsel at the time of the omnibus hearing that said that officer who climbs up on the running boards or the climbs up the truck if it's bigger than running boards in order to speak with the driver, that's akin to putting a tracker device on a vehicle?
Well, there are cases with that specific fact pattern, but of course in Jones, which is a 2012 case, in Legal, a case available to counsel from the Minnesota Supreme Court.
I know, I understand. I understand that those are tracker cases. I'm asking about someone who wants to speak to the driver and because of the height of the cab has to climb up on the truck.
Well, I would have two responses to that. First, as a practical matter, just to be able to speak with the truck's driver, he had options other than climbing up, physically intruding on the truck to perform that encounter. Of course, he could have told Mr. Carpenter to leave the truck. He could have spoken with Mr. Carpenter from the side of the truck without climbing on it. I think the most probably practical thing to do would have been to tell Mr. Carpenter to leave the truck, which he would have been within his rights to do, but then he wouldn't have been able to see inside the truck, which was part of the reason he climbed into the top of the truck to begin with. But another thing that I think is important to clarify is that even though Jones and Legal both involved tracking devices, the fact of the tracking device was not what drove the decision in those cases. In fact, the Jones decision goes at great lengths to explain why other tracking device cases where that evidence collection was upheld are different. It was the fact of the physical intrusion onto the vehicle, the trespass onto the private effect, that drove the decision in both Jones and Legal. It didn't, it, frankly, the fact that the tracking was done electronically was not relevant to the majority opinion in Jones, and that's kind of a gripe of the concurring justices. But the majority opinion in Jones clearly explains that, that it was the physical trespass, the physical intrusion onto the vehicle, and not the electronic tracking aspect that drove the decision. And I think...
Well, in part, it can't, you cannot mean that it didn't include the search component. I mean, the reason that there was a constitutional issue to begin with requires there to be a search or a seizure at play. And so, go ahead.
Of course, the fact, you know, an electronic tracking device was used to conduct the search. That is true. If they hadn't been trying to gather any information, there wouldn't have been a search. But the fact that it was an electronic tracking device that they used was not the reason that the search was unlawful. And similarly, it's not a reason to uphold the search in this case that electronic tracking wasn't used. And I think it's important to point out that even though the facts are different and that electronic tracking was used in that case, and this was a more of a conventional investigation, I think it's important to point out that the investigation was accomplished via a physical trespass, and that the language used in Jones and repeated by the Supreme, our state's Supreme Court in Legal, is extremely clear. In fact, the court in Jones says specifically, it is important to be clear about what happened here. The government physically intruded upon private effects for the purpose of conducting an investigation.
Mr. Lozo, can I ask then, you indicated the best response would have been for the officer to ask him to step out of the vehicle, which I suspect would be true of any vehicle. So the truck driver in this case or in any case could simply say no thank you. And your point being is then a search warrant would have to be obtained before the officer stepped up onto the truck to look in or even to talk to the driver.
My understanding is that he could have been told to leave the truck legally. That it is constitutional to tell a driver of any vehicle, whether a truck or a passenger car, to step out of the vehicle to talk to you. So that's an investigative technique that would be available to police. I don't have the expertise to say it's the best technique, but it's certainly one legal investigative technique that that would allow the officer to conduct the traffic stop without intruding upon the private vehicle.
Are you referring to the Terry standard? So you believe under these facts there would have been sufficient basis to ask a driver out of the vehicle, but not those same circumstances are not articulable suspicion to step up in on the truck to look in the vehicle or talk to the driver?
Well, he needs to perform a search, of course, he needs either a warrant or a warrant exception to perform a search. But
I'm just inquiring about the talking. I understood it's undisputed that his purpose was to talk to the driver.
Well, to perform an investigation that included talking to the driver, but he also, the testimony at the omnibus hearing also establishes that the action of stepping onto the running board is also done to be able to look inside the truck, which is... in the course of that search, he not only talked to and observed Mr. Carpenter, but he also observed items inside the truck that the deputy, acknowledged and testified led him to suspect that Mr. Carpenter was engaged in illegal behavior.
But he observed this looking through the window.
From his position on the truck, yes.
Are you familiar with vehicle identification numbers on vehicles and their location? So you know that officers frequently look at the vehicle identification number of a car while standing outside of a car, looking down at the dashboard through the window on the driver's side.
Yes.
And you're aware that that vehicle identification number is in the same location on semi-trucks.
I'm not aware of that.
Assume from my question that's so, that it's just basically the same place in a truck and a car.
Right.
Is it your position that an officer would violate an individual's constitutional rights, let's say if he stopped a car, by looking at the vehicle identification number from outside?
No. And this
All right. Let's assume for my I have a couple follow-up questions before you delve too deeply into it. Assume there was snow packed on the windshield where the vehicle identification number would otherwise be observable from the outside, and the officer scraped the snow away to see the vehicle identification number. Is that a search?
I think arguably it would be.
You say arguably. Are you aware of any case law that would support that idea?
So one of the cases, of course, this isn't binding on this court, but one of the cases that I recently, in my letter of supplemental authority, the case that was decided after I wrote my initial brief to this court, is a Sixth Circuit case where the Sixth Circuit recently held that it is a search implicating constitutional protections for police to chalk vehicle tires for purposes of parking enforcement. The reason being that police are physically trespassing onto the vehicle to mark that vehicle. That case also differentiated a sort of similar case where police had scraped some paint off of a car, which would be, I guess, somewhat similar to knocking the snow off by touching the car hypothetical. And the only reason the court said that was allowable was because the police had probable cause to search that car already.
So your position is any touching of the car constitutes a search or implicates the Fourth Amendment?
Correct under Jones, yes. Any physical trespass onto a person's private effects, if done for the purpose of investigation, constitutes a search. Of course, if
so vehicles
place a hand on the car without any reason for doing it, that's not a search.
So a person reports their car stolen and says, "I believe that my car that was stolen is located in front of a house on such and such a street, and there's been a light falling of snow. The officer is prohibited from walking up to the car, the unoccupied car, and wiping the snow from the dashboard." Wiping the snow from the windshield in that 3 inches necessary to view the VIN number. You're saying that's a search that would require a warrant.
I think that any person being prosecuted for the theft of that car would have major problems with standing to challenge that action. But I do think that Jones is clear that physical.
Let me change the facts a little bit. A person believes that car was his. The officer walks up to the car, scrapes the snow off the VIN number, or off the windshield to see the VIN number, and sees that it looks like that's the wrong VIN number. But in the process, right in the same location of the VIN number, sees a bloody knife or a package of prepackage of cocaine, and arrests the driver for those violations, or for violation of law of some other sort. There would be no standing issue at that point. So the question I have would be the same. You're saying that would be an unconstitutional search, the wiping away of snow to determine a VIN number.
If a police officer is physically trespassing onto the vehicle for the purpose of investigation, that would at least trigger constitutional search protection.
Besides the Sixth Circuit case that you mentioned of chalking of the tire, which I would suggest is conduct that police officers have been engaging in since there's been chalk and tires, any other court in the country that you found that would have a holding consistent with that one?
The facts of this case are different from other cases that have been decided under this doctrine, but the legal principle is...
No, I'm talking about the chalking of the tires.
No, that case is the only one I know of that type.
Let me ask you this question. I'm sure you agree with this statement by our Supreme Court in State v. Bartilla, a 2008 case. The touchstone of our analysis under the Fourth Amendment is always the reasonableness in all circumstances of the particular governmental invasion of a citizen's personal security. Do you agree with that?
Yes.
And so, how do you think that we apply a Fourth Amendment reasonableness inquiry into this issue?
So, when the search is performed, A search without a warrant is presumptively unreasonable unless a warrant exception applies. Police may not search a person's vehicle without a warrant unless there's a warrant exception. Reasonableness comes in if there is a warrant exception. If there's, for instance, if there's the automobile exception.
Well, here we have a semi-truck swerving down Highway 2 that's almost hitting a woman who then calls 911 because she's upset and feels endangered. That's how I understand the facts of this case. Okay. And so then the officer pulls the truck over. And then what do you think the officer is supposed to do as he's looking up at this? I mean, semi-trucks are presumably the driver is feet above him through a closed door, right?
That's right, yes.
And so what's...
The officer has the option of directing the driver to leave the car if he wants to speak with the driver.
Well, and then what if, as Judge Slater asked you, he says, no, I don't want to get out of the truck. Then what?
My understanding is that he does not have the right to refuse that. And then, of course, that would trigger other action by the police if he was refusing to do that. But my understanding is that police officers have the ability to order drivers that are lawfully stopped to leave their vehicles. And that's one option that was available to the officer in this case to investigate the alleged conduct without physically trespassing onto the vehicle. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for a respondent, you may now proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court. Mr. Lozo, good afternoon. Once again, I'm Dave Frank, Chief Assistant Deputy County Attorney, and I'll be representing the respondent to this argument. To prevail on an ineffective assistance of counsel claim post-conviction petition, the defendant must hold that trial counsel performance was deficient, and second, that the deficiency resulted in a legal determination that would have avoided that would have been avoided absent the deficiency. Now, as it relates to appellant's pretrial suppression claims, appellant can show neither of these prongs under Strickland v. Washington, and therefore the denial of the post-conviction must be affirmed by this court. First, the appellant cannot show trial representation through the 9th Judicial District Public Defender's Office amounted to deficient representation. And I'd like to address a couple of legal points as it relates to this first prong. Appellant has to show that the public defender's performance fell below an objective reasonableness in State versus Gates. In that regard, if the attorney represents appellant with the customary skills and diligence that a reasonably competent attorney would have provided under similar circumstances, then the representation cannot be considered deficient, Bobo versus State. Second point is that trial strategy, in particular methodology for suppression issues, are within the proper discretion of the trial counsel. And for this reason, will generally not be reviewed later for competency determination.
Would you agree that a meritorious constitutional argument must be made, constitutional argument as to a stop, or the basis for either the stop or the investigation, that failure to make that argument, a meritorious argument, would constitute ineffective assistance of counsel?
I would, Judge Ross, if the 9th Judicial District Public Defender did not address the seizure in this case, I would agree that that may very well rise to deficiency, as long as that seizure argument had merit and a district court judge would invariably have granted that suppression.
Well, that's a different question. When you say would have invariably granted, that goes to the prejudice issue. My question is just on the ineffective assistance of counsel issue. Would you agree that even if it's possible that the argument would have failed, if it's a constitutional argument challenging the stop or the search or the seizure, if it's meritorious, failure to make that argument would constitute ineffective assistance?
I would agree, Judge. Judge Ross that if it's meritorious, not going to the extent that I just addressed your question, that it would be an effective assistance of counsel as it relates to the seizure, not the search, because the search is not a meritorious thing. And the presumption that counsel's at trial level performance meets the broad standard of effective assistance of counsel. Now, addressing specifically Mr. Lowe's claim that trial counsel blew it and fell below practicing standards when he chose the conventional approach of challenging the seizure and not making a search argument is simply incorrect. And we have been stated to argue that it does not have merit. And judges who evaluate the constitutionality of a traffic stop and initial interaction between the motorist and law enforcement approach it as a seizure and not a search. That's the state of our Fourth Amendment jurisprudence today. I ask the court to look at Bondarchuk versus Commissioner of Public Safety and State versus Claymar. As this court ruled in Bondarchuk, the visual observations of a peace officer at the side of the road dealing with the motorist on the side of the road, that does not amount to a search. It is within the context of a seizure, and it's protected under the Fourth Amendment in the Minnesota Constitution as a seizure. But the visual observations of the officer, and as they're going through the appeal sobriety test, and as the officer is dealing with the motorist at the side of the vehicle, the visual observations and the sensory perceptions, the odor of the alcohol beverage, the viewing of the empty beer can on the passenger seat, that is not a search. That can go to a seizure. When we look at whether or not that stop was appropriate, we don't consider it to be a search.
Can I ask you a question going beyond the stop to in the context of a search? I'm just curious how you think the law would play out if, let's say, a waitress at a truck stop contacts law enforcement and says, "I'm not sure which one of these four truckers said it, but I heard one of them say that they always keep a sawed-off shotgun sitting on the seat of the cab in their semi, and a police officer shows up and there are four semi trucks in the parking lot of this truck stop, not enough for a search warrant, not sure who made the statement, and the officer wants to investigate by climbing onto the board of the truck up the steps to look into the window of each of the trucks to see whether any of the four have this a shotgun in the front seat. My question for you is, does this qualify as plain view, or is this a violation of constitutional rights in the officers climbing up on a cab under those facts?
Judge Ross, under those facts, the state would argue that this court should consider the reasonable expectation of privacy that all individuals have in a motor vehicle. As this court knows, that expectation of privacy is dramatically reduced when we're talking about a motor vehicle. This is not a home. This is not a built a building. This is a motor that is used publicly on the roads. And as a result, I guess I want a bit more facts, Judge.
Well, that's all you get. That's all you get. And I understand the plain view distinction between an automobile and a home is you have on the home you've got curtilage and you have other protections, but an automobile you don't have that. But in my hypothetical, you have this extra element that we have in this case, which is the climbing onto the truck to look into the window. What's your position as to whether the looking into the window after climbing up onto the truck would constitute would fit under the plain view exception or not?
It would certainly fit under the plain view exception. We look at plain view all the time when we see the meth pipe that is found in plain after the officer walks up to the vehicle.
Right, but under the plain view In the plain view exception, you always have the first step of the analysis is the question, is the officer in a lawful position to have this plain view of the contraband? And so I guess that this is where my hypothetical sort of takes us, which is, why doesn't the climbing onto the truck, how does climbing onto the truck affect that first step in the analysis, which I think is would have to apply to this case as well?
I think from the state standpoint, it doesn't. Because a peace officer has the right to walk up to a vehicle and speak to a driver or a passenger to inform that individual of the reason for the traffic stop. That's part of a lawful seizure. It's not a search. If the officer sees in plain view, or that officer is illegal to me, if that officer sees evidence of crime in plain view as the officer is speaking with the motorist to explain the reason for the stop, keep in mind that officer has an obligation to determine whether that motorist is impaired or whether that motorist is suffering some sort of medical emergency. That can only happen if that officer goes up to the window to speak directly, face to face, with the motorist. That's how officers are trained throughout this country, and this court has made the determination that face-to-face interaction is not a search.
You're talking about the face-to-face interaction. I'm talking about, I think what the appellant is talking about, and I think what the issue hangs on, is the climbing up onto the vehicle, and your emphasis on a face-to-face, looking eyeball to eyeball, looking inside the vehicle. I mean, those things are all valid points, but they don't get to the question that I think is at the heart of this case, which is, does the officer have a lawful right to climb onto a vehicle before engaging in this face-to-face engagement?
And I would argue this because that officer needs to have that face-to-face interaction with the motorist to determine if there's reasons to believe that the motorist is impaired or facing some sort of medical emergency.
Were you able to find any case law on point, a traffic stop, an officer climbing onto a vehicle, and then a face-to-face discussion with the observation of contraband? Was there any case you found anywhere in the country analyzing the Fourth Amendment under this circumstance?
I did not, Judge Ross. But I would ask the court to look back to Vondrajec when this court determined that the visual observations do not amount to a search. The observations of the officer in that face-to-face meeting with the motorist is not a search.
Let me interrupt you again for one other question.
Yes.
And I'm sorry for interrupting you, but because of the interactive television, there's sort of a delay, so you can't see that I'm about to ask a question, and I appreciate that. So I apologize for interrupting you. But do you agree that, as far as the general public is concerned, that an individual who climbs onto someone else's vehicle without consent is engaging in a trespass?
I do not. Well, not certainly in this circumstance, someone who is attempting to rifle through the vehicle without authority, I would certainly agree with that, Judge Ross.
No, I mean, not... Let's just say someone is walking through a truck stop and just decides he wants to look in the window of every truck and climbs up, private citizen, not a police officer, starts to climb onto the running board and take the steps, hanging onto the rearview mirror, looking into the window to see what's inside the truck. You're saying that's not a trespass?
I would say under those circumstances, it is not a trespass. Again, we're talking about a motor vehicle that is driven into a public location. And people are around who can look into that vehicle. As long as they don't physically enter the truck, I would argue that's not a trespass.
So a dump truck, let's say a truck is stopped and Curious bypassers want to see what's in the back of the truck. Let's say it's not an enclosed semi, but an open truck with canvas around the outside. But can a person climb up onto the truck and peer inside of, peer downward into what is inside of the cargo compartment of the truck? You're saying that's not a trespass either?
Judge Ross, I would say if we get farther and farther into your hypotheticals, then we are venturing into trespass territory.
If this had been an open truck and a police officer stopped the defendant and the officer suspected or had a hunch there was something in the back of the truck and just wanted to climb up and look inside of the back of the truck, could the officer have done that? Not looking into the passenger compartment, but looking into the truck, the cargo compartment?
Without reasonable, articulable suspicion that there was somehow illegal cargo, I would say no. But that is different from the facts that we're talking about right here. When another citizen has contacted law enforcement to talk about very dangerous driving, the officer necessarily has to be concerned about public safety and needs that face-to-face meeting to determine, is there bloodshot, watery eyes? Is there an odor of alcohol? Is there some sort of medical condition?
Well, troopers engage in stopping semi-trucks all the time without necessarily calling the driver out or not climbing up onto the running board of the truck, either by having a conversation through the window from below or asking the driver to step out of the truck. So when you're saying that the officer needed to have a face-to-face discussion, you agree, don't you, that the officer had the authority to call the driver out and to leave the truck without violating his constitutional rights?
The officer could certainly have done that under State versus Asgroot and State versus Claymore, but that doesn't require the officer to make that particular choice. The officer could certainly have that face-to-face conversation in deference to the motorist by climbing up onto the running boards and having that conversation, just like they would in any other traffic stop.
Well, in any other traffic stop, you wouldn't have a climbing onto the vehicle because your officer is standing outside without touching the vehicle.
True. But here, when the motorist is in an elevated state, that officer needs to have that face-to-face discussion in order to make those necessary evaluations to protect public safety. I am running short. I'd ask that the court to particularly review Stevenson, where this court determined that there was not a reasonable expectation of privacy in an elevated pickup truck.
Thank you,
and
Mr. Frank.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome. Mr. Lozo, you may do your rebuttal at this point.
Thank you. There's been obviously what this court is focused on, and it makes sense to be focused on what's reasonable. What is going to be the effect of this? What's reasonable? To ask for police to do, for people to expect for their protection of their privacy and their rights. And as counsel acknowledged, I had a chance to look at Asgroot while counsel was speaking. Under Asgroot, under MIMS, police can order people out of cars without a reason. They can do that. As Judge Ross noted, police can and do make similar traffic stops without climbing onto the person's vehicle. Finding here, in accordance with Jones, that the act of climbing onto the vehicle in order to investigate Mr. Carpenter, in order to look inside the vehicle, finding that was a search is not going to have, does not need to have any effect on law enforcement's ability to enforce any type of driving infraction, including driving while.
Do you think we would be in a different position if, since everyone agrees that there are no other cases with these specific kind of facts raised in a suppression hearing that have analyzed this as a search as opposed to a stop? I go back to the attorney who first represented your client, and he made reasonable arguments at the suppression hearing, I don't know that it was objectively unreasonable for him not to have thought of applying Jones. And so if he had applied Jones, we would be, this would be a really interesting legal argument because we'd be at a different stage in the proceedings, if you get what I'm saying.
Yes, so counsel, and it's sort of, counsel argued, look, he did challenge this as a seizure. He took the conventional approach. He lost with the conventional approach, and the reason that he lost with the conventional approach is because his argument was completely foreclosed by the Supreme Court's decision in Adirondack, California, on almost exactly similar facts. The Supreme Court said that this seizure was fine. Similarly here, that's the reason that that argument isn't renewed on appeal, because that argument, that conventional argument, is foreclosed by Supreme Court precedent. With regard to the idea that his performance can be considered reasonable because there isn't a case with these exact facts, I would respond in two ways. One is that if this issue is meritorious and counsel failed to litigate it, that in and of itself is ineffective assistance of counsel, the failing to litigate a meritorious outcome determinative claim. But I also think it's
well, wait a minute. That's not necessarily so if it's a novel claim. If no lawyer has succeeded on this argument anywhere in the country, as far as you've been able to find, and in fact the argument has not been raised anywhere in the country, I think you make the good case that an excellent lawyer would have made the argument, but to say that it's objectively unreasonable for an ineffective for a lawyer not to raise the argument for the first time seems to me to be a bit of a stretch on Strickland. Can you respond to that concern?
Absolutely. The reason that it's objectively reasonable is because of the clarity of the holding in Jones. The Supreme Court in Jones was careful to be clear about how broad its holding was and what specific police conduct was prohibited. The holding in Jones is clear that any physical intrusion upon a private vehicle, anything that would be a common law trespass, which this court was right to question state's counsel about that, it certainly would be a common law trespass to climb onto a vehicle and look inside. Any common law trespass by law enforcement for the purpose of investigation is clearly a search under Jones, and even if these specific facts haven't been litigated before, I don't know how common it is for police to climb onto trucks to look inside them without a warrant, but this conduct of physical intrusion onto a vehicle is clearly prohibited by Jones, and the failure to recognize that was not only occurred, but in fact was the reason that the officer testified that he continued the investigation in the way that he did, expanded the scope and duration of the stop in the way that he did, should have been clear under Jones and under legal.
Jones has been around since 2012, and
yes.
This is the first time I've seen this issue raised this way, and I've been on the bench since 2012. And so if it's so clear, it's surprising to me that we haven't had this case before, because there certainly are a lot of big semis and big pickups running around the roads of the country.
I don't know how common the officer's actions in this case were. I don't know how common the officer's actions in the case were, but I think that the officer's conduct clearly fits into what constitutes a search under Jones, and on these facts, that argument should have been recognized and raised. Thank you.
Thank you to both counsel. We appreciate your comments and your briefing. We will take the matter under advisement, and you each have a good day.
Thank you.
You're welcome.